Hello and welcome to Wrestling and Everything Coast to Coast with your host, Buddy Sotelo Esquire and Mike Leno. And right now it looks like we're going to be joined hopefully later by Evan Ginsberg. But Mike, would you like to introduce our guest for tonight?
Sure. This is a gentleman, great friend of mine, but an even greater friend to wrestling. He has done so much, contributed so much. Of course, close friends with John Tolis. We're doing the book on, and Jesse's been so kind. Jesse Hernandez is a longtime wrestler, promoter, trainer. He and Bill Anderson started EWF. They finessed and really made the world aware of Chris Daniels and our beloved friend Louis Spicoli. He worked for WWF, you know, through the 80s when the nationalization went on. They did everything from having the ring crew, going from city to city, getting all the house shows, TV, everything, and then reffing, wrestling, whatever was necessary. I'm sure running the locker room. Jesse Hernandez has done it all in the wrestling business, and he joins us on a day when there hasn't been a tropical storm in about 80, 90 years in California. Of course, where he is in San Bernardino, it's the I think the epicenter may be going over there at some point. And we are having like trees coming down, evacuations, flash flooding, thunder, lightning, hail, just where I am in little dinky Orange County. But Jesse Hernandez, thank you so much, particularly with us talking and focusing on a good friend of ours for decades and decades in John Tolis, the Golden Greek.
Golden Greek, what a legend that is. What a legend. Absolutely.
Let me ask you, and I think Russ would probably also, you know, ask this if I hadn't, but let me find out where you grew up, because there's some stuff, you know, I think it's been probably 30 years since I've interviewed you. Normally we see each other at Cauliflower Alley or shows like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla that you've helped me with, your own incredible promotion in school there. But did you grow up in like Southern California? Tell us about all of that and how you might have become, you know, most of us, the good long-timers became fans before they got into the business. But tell us your story and maybe how it, you know, you were watching John Tolis when you were a kid.
I met, I actually lived in Salinas and I used to watch wrestling from San Francisco. Patterson, all those guys, you know, that's where I first saw wrestling, but I was not a fan. It just was on TV. And it was in 1963 that we moved to San Bernardino. And then I eventually started going to the wrestling matches. And it was in 1979 that I started training to be a wrestler. And it took me 2 years. Unlike some of the guys nowadays, they train 6 months and they're wrestling, you know. I don't understand that. But, you know, it's a crazy world nowadays. And eventually I wound up working for the LaBelle promotion. And that's where I met you. And I learned so much by working there. It got me into WWF. I started when WWF, when Michael Cole actually sold.
We lost Jesse's audio. Jesse, you're still there?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Because Mike LaBelle was very close originally for years and years in the 70s with Vince McMahon Sr. But, you know, you were on TV every week on our show, our Wednesday TV 90-minute show, Lucha Libre from the Olympic Auditorium, which, you know, it was syndicated on the Spanish International Network, SIN. It was taped on Wednesday. I think I don't think it was live. I think they gave themselves, like, the KCOP Channel 13 earlier, like a half-hour lag to do post-production. Then they put it up, but then, you know, within a week, it was in Hispanic cities all over the United States through SIN. New York, famously, Chicago, Miami, Tampa, et cetera. Austin, it was on there. And so you were seen on there. But how did you transition from a wrestler in the office? Bill Anderson was there. Tom Renesco, I think, was booking. Was he booking your entire tenure for LaBelle promotion?
Absolutely. When I started, it was Tom Renesto. He was doing the booking and you know, matchmaking and everything. So yeah, he's the one that gave me the name Hernandez, because I wanted to be a wrestler with a mask, like wrestling with a fire. And one day Tom comes to me and says, "Hey, I need you to I would like for you to referee." And of course, you know, like even the guys nowadays, you know, they're idiots, and I was an idiot myself, you know. I said, oh, I just want to wrestle. I don't want to be a referee.
So we're losing Jesse's audio again.
That's terrible. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, restart that. So I was going to say, had you accepted to be a referee, you'd be on TV even more, but you didn't realize that at the time. So you, what were you saying? You said, did you tell Tom you prefer to be a wrestler, or did you do okay with being a ref?
Yeah, I told Tom, you know, I don't want to be a referee. They wanted to get rid of some referee at the time, and they wanted somebody else to take the place, and they wanted me to referee. When you're not wrestling, you're refereeing. You're always going to be working. So I understood, and I said, hell yeah, I'll do it then. And that's when I accepted right away. And then he's the one that gave me the name Hernandez. And yeah. I asked him why Hernandez, and he told me that his mother's maiden name was Hernandez, and that's the first thing he thought. Well, then I became Jesse Hernandez by Tom Renesto.
Say that again. So it wasn't any of the famous Hernandez brothers that wrestled like in the 50s and 60s he named you after? It was someone else?
After his mother's maiden name.
I got you. Okay. Yeah, your audio dropped on that. So that's very important. The creation of Jesse Hernandez, wow, from his mother's maiden name. That's major. Tom Renesto, too, for our listeners, was the assassin, part of the best, biggest assassin original tag team with Jody Hamilton. So they were, and they wrestled at the Olympic, like against Don Leo Jonathan and a babyface Nikki Bockwinkle in like 63, 64. So the masked assassin. So Renesto had prior history as an actual wrestler. And of course, he had, was it two sons, Tim Daltry? Was there a second one, Tom Renesto?
Tom Renesto Jr.
Tom Renesto Jr., okay.
He was wrestling as the assassin out here.
Now, I know John Tolis's heyday, you know, it kind of, as our lead heel, and he, you know, veered back and forth like 1972. I don't know if you were watching, when did you start those? If you were watching in the 60s, Roy Shire's product, and you said you moved to San Bernardino in 1963?
1963, and I eventually in 64 or 65, I started attending the wrestling matches, and it was in 1979 that I started training, and I trained all the way through, for 2 years, actually, and I had my first match in 1981, January 25th, 1981.
Now, who trained you, though? Who broke you in? Gene LaBelle?
Remember Black Gorman and Goliath?
Oh, of course. Yeah. They were one of the greatest tag teams ever. And at the Coliseum show, outdoor Coliseum show in 71, Gorman and Goliath wrestled Shibuya and Saito. Masa Saito was a historic match.
Yeah. So I was Goliath.
So it was Pablo Goliath, or was it Black Gorman that trained you?
Oh, it was Goliath, Pablo. Okay.
Yeah, he was an incredible trainer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, man, he had one of the fastest leg drops. He was an incredible wrestler. They do not get their due, particularly Goliath, was just so quick in ring as a mat technician, you know, mat and chain wrestling. They were just amazing. And the heat they got, all of that. But when did you, so if you were attending matches prior to that, you know, you saw probably, tell us about when you first watched John Tolis and all of your thoughts about him before you actually got to meet him.
Oh my God, I mean, he was such a heel, you know, the matches that he had with Freddie Blassie were incredible. I remember when he blinded Freddie Blassie, supposedly, you know. All of that I watched.
That was at the KCOP Channel 13. We lost that Channel 13. It was similar, Russ, to when Roy Shire first lost Channel 2 in 1970. Russ, I've told you this a couple of times, and it's like insane to think of it. The premier channel of independence, you know, non-CBS, ABC, NBC, was Channel 2, Oakland in San Francisco, Oakland, Bay Area, the whole Bay Area, San Jose. Roy Scheer wouldn't stop spitting his tobacco juice on the floors. He kept getting warnings, and he lost it. And then he had to do his TV on, like, the crappiest UHF station, Channel 40 out of Sacramento. And his lead announcer, who was, like, doing the major news, evening news on Channel 2 and also calling the action for the San Francisco Giants, refused to drive, you know, any further. You know, he was driving from Los Gatos to San Francisco and Oakland for the tapings, but he wouldn't drive an additional 90 minutes to Sacramento. So Roy Scheer had to finagle get another announcer who lived closer to Sacramento. And that was kind of, you know, a slow death for that territory. But the Blassie being given the wrestler of the year, the most popular wrestler of the year trophies by Dick Lane at KCOP was what led to that, like, 8 months long angle where Tolis, he's getting jealous. He's seeing Blassie get all these awards in one night at KCOP, and he goes into Dr. Bernhard Schwartz's medical bag, pulls out the Monsell's powder, the cut-stopping powder, throws it in Blassie's eyes. You know, then they did weeks of Blassie with bandages over his eyes in St. John's Hospital and another hospital. Jeff Walton told me the first one they filmed Blassie at the hospital at was in Watts. And Fred was not happy with that, so they moved him to St. John's Hospital, to a similar hospital bed. But go on. I interrupted you on the seeing John Tolis. Like, he was an incredible heel, I thought, not only in ring, but doing state-of-the-art promos with Blassie and anybody else he was facing, Mascaras, Rocky Johnson, Earl Mater, Don Carson.
The promos were incredible. He was great at promos.
Absolutely. Let me throw Russ in here, because Russ has been a student of, like, heels and managers, as Russ was a manager on promos. Russ, let me throw to you.
Oh, okay. I was getting used to your 20-minute questions, so I was waiting for you to finish up. Jesse, so what other territories did you work in, or have you always worked in California?
I traveled a lot with WWF, yeah, as a referee. Went to Texas, up north, Washington, Oregon, and Nevada. And for other promotions, I used to work for AWA as well, jobbing out, putting the guys over, over in Vegas at the TV tapings that they used to do at the Showboat.
How do you feel the California territories differed from where you traveled outside of California?
How I see it right now?
No, when you were working, what do you feel was the big difference between, you know, performing in California or doing a show outside of California?
To me, it was the same. It was pretty much the same. I didn't see any difference, except, you know, maybe a little bit on the style. Every territory has their own style of doing things, you know. We call it when you raise your leg up in the air when you hit the ropes. Most everybody out here calls it Texas style, you know. When my students do that, I say you're wrestling, you're running the ropes like you're in Texas or something, you know. But that's more of a joke than anything else. I'm not even sure if it's the same thing right now or the same way at the moment. But it was.
What was the greatest match that you felt that you ever refereed?
Oh, so many. But one that comes to my mind is Magnum TA versus Ric Flair. It was an NWA event that they did in LA. And to me, that was the most exciting match, a long match as well. Because at the time, I was used to just refereeing WWF matches that didn't last no more than 15, 20 minutes on house shows, 7 minutes or so on TV. And here I am in the ring with Magnus TA and Rick. And 30 minutes later, I said, when are you guys taking it home? He said, we're halfway there. They wrestled for about a year, man. It was very exciting. Another exciting match in WWF was Leilani Kai. And her partner, I can't remember her name right now.
Judy Martin.
Martin, along the Japanese girls.
The Jumping Bomb Angels.
Jumping Bomb Angels, that's it. Jumping Bomb, yeah.
What an exciting.
Norio Tateno, and I forget the other one. Norio Tateno was the one with the longer hair.
Yes.
I love the Jumping Bomb Angels. Why do you think they never got a bigger push in the WWE?
I don't know.
Oh, that Evan?
No, I think it's his phone.
My phone. It's vibrating, yeah.
Oh, it's looking pretty bad. It's a warning, weather warning thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, thankfully that you're able to keep it going with all the bad storm activity you're having in the Central Valley. And we got a lot of humidity here. I don't know how Mike's being affected by it. So far, you seem fine.
Yeah, no, there have been trees that have come down. I'm just looking out the window now, and one in our front is almost ready to go. So it's major wind now, because finally the storm Hillary is hit. We've had rain since 1 a.m. Jesse, how has the weather been there before? Has it been pretty intense?
Raining pretty much of the day, and some wind. Not heavy wind, but still some wind.
Well, at least the fire danger will be down for, you know, normally in like late August to early October, the fire season's the most intense because everything's been so dry for so long. But at least the Central Valley is not going to have that problem for this time of year.
I'm going to get back to John Tolles, but Russ, I'll tell you, the JB Angels, they weren't promoted right when they got back to Japan. Of course, in All Japan Women, they were phenomenal. They had long careers. I was at Norio Tateno's retirement. It was in March of 1991 at Korakuen Hall. Big, huge deal. She quit early because most of the time, All Japan Women, my boss there, Rossi Ogawa, who booked, and now he started Stardom, which is owned by the parent company of New Japan for the men. But Norio Tateno thought that Tor Berg, you remember that guy who put on that, it was LP... WA, it was a syndicated weekly, but it was a serious women's
from Vegas, in Vegas.
And they had the glamour girls, Judy Martin, Leilani Kai. They had Medusa, they had Mimi Lesios, and tons of people that I knew, Brittany Brown, and many others. And she gets the call, like I'm in the dressing room with her. It was packed with bouquets at Korakuen Hall. She had her own dressing room, you know, after her retirement. She gets the call from Tor Berg, and he had convinced her to retire early, and he was going to make her a star in the U.S., give her all this money as a single star, put the strap on her for his promotion in the early 90s, 91, 92. And he calls and says, well, the deal fell through. And she was like heartbroken and crying. And her tag partner and some of the other wrestlers. That was also the night Demi Malenko debuted from Florida for All Japan Women. But Jesse, so you're watching John Tolles, and I don't know if you remember how great he was in 72 when Chris Tolles. Do you remember when Chris Tolles came in to help him with Killer Kowalski? John had turned babyface like the previous October, November of 1971. But do you recall John as a babyface in 72 with the matches with Killer Kowalski, Billy Graham, Ernie Ladd, The Sheik? That was an incredible year for him as a babyface. First time he'd ever been babyface.
Quite honestly, I don't remember him as a babyface. I mostly remember him being, at times he was a babyface here and there, but not as much. But no, I don't remember that. When Chris Tolles was here or anything like that.
That was a big deal because, well, anyway, we go up to like 75, and around March of 75, Greg Valentine, his Million Dollar Baby, his protege. Greg was very young then, fresh out of the Ohio, Buffalo, New York NWF promotion. He turns on Tolles, who then turned babyface again. It wasn't as successful, but so let's... How and when did you meet John Tolles, if you recall?
It was working for Mike LaBelle, refereeing and stuff, being in the same dressing room with him. And we worked together on a movie that, what was that?
Grunt, the wrestling movie.
Grunt, the wrestling movie, exactly, yeah. And then working for LPWA, I think he came in also as a coach. And then Vince picked him up after that.
Were you with him in the WWF that time? Because I was told that Fred Blassie, they were very close, and Chris Tolis told us, John Tolis' son, named after John's wrestling brother. Chris said that Blassie, Russell recall, would like come to John and Ingrid's home in Woodland Hills, and they'd have a barbecue and have beers and tell old ribs and stories. But Fred got John the gig, and he was hoping that Vince would let John Tolis do what he did best, which was on the fly promos without a script, without reading off a teleprompter, without having to memorize anything. And they didn't. They basically just told him to blow the whistle. And he did some promos, you know, for the Beverly Brothers and Kurt Hennig, but it wasn't tapping into John's strength with these incredible promos. But at least Blassie got them the job and the payday for the year or so that he stayed there. It was just kind of disappointing. We all were hoping it would work for John there, you know, to follow through with Blassie and Albano and the Grand Wizard and other managers had done.
I was disappointed that they didn't keep him long enough, you know, to really show his strength.
So was he, I don't know if you were still with WWF, I think you were, when John came in.
Yeah.
Were you seeing and talking to him in the dressing room, et cetera, on the, maybe driving to shows?
Well, driving, but of course in the dressing room, and, you know, I was refereeing at the time, yeah.
Tell us about John. This would, Evan would ask this, I know. Tell us about John, like the human being, maybe away from the fans, away from the ring, or in the dressing room. As I heard, John loved to laugh, create jokes, sometimes pull ribs. What was John Tolis like for you as a human being?
Human being, he was very kind. I remember, I'll tell you, coming up with a match and Tom, I was okay, can you? But the match, you know, if I did right, wrong, or whatever, oh, he'd pat me on the back and say, "Ah, it was well, pretty good, son. Good, good, good." And that was it. I'd go in the dressing room, and John would give me advice and say, "Hey, look, kid, when you do this, do it this way, do it that way." You know, he was very good at giving advice. Another thing that I remember, you know, before the show started, he was early, and there was a lady there. And she told John, the guy's gonna start she asked, "How was your first match?" She asked him. And he said, "Terrible. My first match was not good." And that always stayed in my mind. And so then as I teach, my goal is for them not to ever have to say that. That's why I don't allow my students, my guys start wrestling until they're more than ready. Because I believe that their first match in their career, that's the one that they're going to remember forever. And if it was a bad match, then it reflects on me. So even myself, I'm very proud to say that my tag team match that I had, me and my partner, against Rey Mysterio Sr. And this guy, Pequeño Apollo in Tijuana, was a great match. I'd pay $1,000 if I could find that match on film. It was that good.
Do you know if Rey Mysterio Sr., is he still in a wheelchair? He was in a wheelchair for a while.
Still in a wheelchair.
That's basically heartbreaking because such a great, great guy. And, you know, his son is still out there. I was hoping for, you know, maybe WWE to bring him in and tag him up with the, you know, the nephew, Rey Mysterio Jr. Why WWE won't put the junior part on the name, but
WWE had me looking for Latino talent for a while, and he was one of the guys that I wanted in there. I sent him, and at the beginning, they were hung for it, and then when I don't know what to do, refused him. And I don't know who had what to do with that.
That might be fun, though. There's still a chance if they brought in El Hijo de Rey Mysterio Sr. To team with like Dominic,
yeah.
And, you know, because he looks so much like, in some ways, like Ray Jr., obviously a little younger and skinnier, but that would be great. And the same thing, too, is I should have you tell people how difficult it is. Blassie, and particularly Tolis, who had to wrestle all the Hispanic lucha legends when they came in, Ray Mendoza was the absolute legend. Mexican wrestling He was like the commissioner down there. He was part of the whole board overseeing Lucha Libre in Mexico City. But Tolis wrestled Raul Reyes, Raul Mata, Ruben Juarez, obviously Oscars. But they had to wrestle from a different side because Lucha, you're wrestling from, tell the people, is it from Lucha you're wrestling on the right side or the left? Izquierda o derecho?
The left. They lead with the right hand forward. They lead with the right, and of course American wrestling is the left side.
Yeah, so in American wrestling they lead with the left. See,
yes.
Jesse, I had a question. I did mostly managing, and I've only gotten in the ring a couple times myself. But one thing people don't know is that in some dark matches and in some practice stuff, I actually did some refereeing. And I wanted to know, what did you feel was a more challenging position to be in? Was it to be a wrestler in the ring or was it to be a referee? Because I think a lot of people don't understand how difficult being a referee is if you want to take it seriously, if you want to do a good job.
You know, I believe that if you want to get into wrestling, I really do believe that you should try to wrestling first and then become a wrestler, because it'll make you a better wrestler, because you have the chance to be there as they're putting a match together. You learn so much from that. But I found it very exciting to referee, especially working for the big promotions. As a referee, I was very proud to have done that. As a wrestler, I think I made more money as a referee than I have as a wrestler. Quite honestly, I made a lot of money refereeing.
Sure, but the thing that I've always thought of is the referee, you really have to be a good listener. You know, you don't get a lot to say input-wise as how the match goes. You just have to really concentrate and hear what the wrestlers are doing and be there for the right spots.
Not only that, but you can help the match because, you know, I remember when working for LaBelle, and guys would come in from other territories, and to them it was a big thing. It was almost like, you know, like working Madison Square Garden, you know. So a lot of wrestlers, especially the younger wrestlers, were kind of afraid of coming in and messing up. And I'm happy to say that I helped a lot of them, you know, as a referee. If they were having problems getting out of a hold, I would guide them. I would, you know, dictate to them what they could do to get out of a move or whatever. Or sometimes the match would die down a little bit, and I said, hey, shoot him and give him a backdrop. Boom, that woke up the people. And that's being a good referee and then helping the match, because sometimes you need to help the wrestlers.
Well, especially if someone gets injured. Did you ever have to call a match short because someone got injured?
Yeah, I will do it in a way that hopefully people didn't notice it, you know. I tried to get them to tag out right away or whatever, but I will communicate with the, especially on tag matches, communicate with them to, you know, to save the match and be done with it. Go for a pin right away.
Can you think of any examples of when you had to call a match like really short because of an injury?
There was, if I remember, maybe a women's match. One of the girls got hurt. I think it was in Fresno, and I don't remember who it was. And I don't think it was a big show. It was just a smaller type of event. And one of the girls got hurt. But it was a tag match, and I had the girls just interrupt, you know, and then, you know, go into a wild, crazy deal there, and then get the girl out so the other girl could come in fresh and continue with the match. But it didn't end there. I mean, in other words, the match was able to continue a little bit longer and into the finish.
All right, Jesse, I've got to get back to Tolis and the amount of time we have. When you were attending shows, though, what was the name of the LaBelle venue in San Bernardino?
San Bernardino Arena.
Okay, San Bernardino Arena. Do you remember any specific Tolis matches there at those house shows? Were those weekly or every other week?
For Mike LaBelle, it was a weekly.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Many of the towns like Ventura and Bakersfield and El Monte, et cetera, were weekly. Do you remember any specific Tolis matches like maybe with Ernie Ladd or with later 70s, maybe 1980 with he was a heel. So I don't know if he was teaming. Sheik and Pampiro Firpo came in as heels. Do you remember any specific Tolis matches or tag matches?
There was just so many. I mean, they were all great matches. I mean, I remember him wrestling just about almost everybody that was out here. But I can't specifically recall, you know, one specific match. I just remember him with everybody, man, you know. As a fan, when Killer Kowalski was out here, I remember him wrestling Killer. But that was way back in the day. I was just a fan.
Now, obviously, Kowalski was our monster heel in 72. John also, well, at Bakersfield, that was pretty major. So I forgot to ask you about ribs. Do you remember John pulling any ribs, like on Dwayne Allen, for example, in 73? It was an ex-Ram. John was like messing with him because he had no business being in the ring or being on TV for the few months he was on there. Do you remember any ribs or practical jokes John might have pulled in the dressing room away from fans?
The only one that I can remember, I don't know if it's proper to tell, but my tag team partner was very skinny. You know, he was small, skinny, but he's it is funny. I remember John Tolos telling him, "God damn, kid, your manhood is bigger than your body."
was that wasn't Tim Patterson? Who was that?
No, that was Juan Hernandez, my tag team.
Oh, Juan Hernandez. Okay. Were you also teaming with Pistol Pete? Because I know John supposedly liked he wasn't around as much as he was earlier in the 70s, but Pistol Pete, who we lost way too young a couple of years ago. Do you remember maybe John giving him a hard time in a gentle way or goofing around with Pistol?
I don't remember anything like that. What I do remember is Freddie Blassie and him. Freddie, for a WWF event, Blassie came in to do something else on you know, local TV or whatever. And so he was visiting us, and John came to visit the venue over at the sports arena. And one of the newscasts from Channel 7 was a big fan of both of them, I guess. And he says, "Guys, can you guys cut a promo? And I want to film it just for me personally, not to put out or anywhere, anything else." And they did. They cut a promo on each other. And there was a couple of chairs, and they started the promo, almost like a match, slow, and then build up, louder, 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 and then eventually screaming at each other and almost ready to hit each other with the chairs. That was the best promo I have ever seen, seriously.
Do you remember the name of the Channel 7? Was it one of the sportscasters, like Stu Nahan?
It could have been. I remember the face, but gosh darn if I don't remember the name. But yeah,
if he had gray hair even then in the like 1980 or 82, it was it had to have been Stu Nahan.
Probably. I remember a tall guy with dark hair. That's what I remember.
Wow, so that would be something to get that footage, because there's no footage. Mike LaBelle erased all of it, including the Tolis Blassie blinding incident in like February of 1971. How about John in Carl Lauer's promotion at California Championship Wrestling, which wasn't maybe the world's best, but John, like, you know, Russ and you were talking about managing. John was managing Professor Tanaka, Toru Tanaka, for that.
Guys. Yeah, he managed him. And a couple of other guys at the time, and he did color commentary as well. Yeah, I remember all that.
And of course, how was his color commentary different? Because he mostly worked as a heel. He mostly cut heel promos. But on color, was he like, by that point we had Jesse Ventura, who kind of brought that to fame. Although the first guy to do heel color commentary, I haven't ever told Russ this, was Ripper Collins in like 1970, yeah, it was 73, January 73, he debuted with Dick Lane in LA, very first heel color commentator. Pepper Martin was the first wrestling regular, you know, He was just a babyface. He was doing straight down the middle commentary years prior, and he was doing it in both L.A. and San Francisco. But Ripper Collins from Hawaii, so how was John's, him on TV, like putting over other guys on color or calling a match or doing color on a match?
Good. He will try to get the heels over a little bit more than the babies, of course. Yeah, but he was good. Very good.
Do you remember any of the days there, like maybe John giving either Carl Lauer or later Herb Abrams, shit as promoters who maybe weren't the greatest promoters of all time? Like Carl Lauer told me some of the promos they did right at his house in his kitchen, in the early, which is kind of incredibly amateur hour, but.
Right. No, everything that I was involved in was done at the San Bernardino Arena.
Oh, so that was the main place that Carl was doing his stuff?
Yeah.
At least at that point.
At that point, yes.
What were you doing? Were you both wrestling and reffing, or primarily reffing in that period of time?
I did both referee, wrestle, it all depends. Depending where they wanted me at.
But I know John liked and respected you, so if he was managing, did he like give you shit as a... as the ref and, saying you were counting too slow or, the usual stuff that a heel would do?
Of course, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yep. I remember when we were filming the movie Grunt, for example, and they made a special suit for him to wear, gold collar, I think it was. And I don't know what, I went to push him or whatever, from behind, and there was a damn needle stuck to his damn to that outfit. It got me right in the hand. But jeez. Yeah.
Tell Russ and I about that film. Russ, you've seen Grunt, right? The wrestling movie with Adrian Street and Tolis, and Steve Strong was in it too.
No, I have never seen Grunt. That's it's a hard video to find.
Oh, you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah,
I'll have to watch it one of these days.
Yeah, it is pretty. Jesse, what can you tell us about?
I remember back in the 80s, I wanted to rent it, and I couldn't. It wasn't in any video store. So but you could get Body Slam if you wanted to. But you couldn't get the Grunt.
But on Grunt, though, Jesse, tell us any stories you remember told us, or was Steve Strong, who was teaming with John in, in fact, they held Ed Francis's tag titles in Honolulu for let's see. Ed Francis was a promoter with Lord Tallyho Blears, his partner there doing the commentary. I don't know if you worked with John in Hawaii, but tell us about John on set on Grunt and his dynamic with Adrian Street and his, his friend. He was helping Steve Strong quite a bit get over as an early talent, fresh out of Stu Hart's dungeon.
Yeah, even on the Carl Lauer's events. He was his manager as well. Tolis was the manager of Steve Strong. But yeah, they got along very well together, and he was always pushing for him.
But how about on the set, though, either when the cameras were on or the cameras were off, what was John, if you can recall, like on Grunt? That was like the first movie he ever did, so it was a big deal.
Well, I don't remember anything more than, just being there and as soon as they said cut, everybody went their own way, and I didn't really, hang around, with them too much.
So there was no after parties for that, or I don't know if Carl Lauer or Herb Abrams had parties after, because I usually would drive Gorgeous George's widow back and leave John there for someone else to drive. So did anybody have after parties, either LaBelle's office or Herb Abrams or Carl Lauer or like the Grunt? It doesn't sound like there were after parties after a day's shoot of Grunt.
No, I don't remember any. No, there was no parties. I had on Grunt. I was there pretty much on all any time that they were filming wrestling. My contract was to be there because I helped get Mando Guerrero in there to help out, in that movie. They originally wanted Terry Funk to work with them to help them, and Terry couldn't be there for them. He was involved in some other projects, so he recommended Mando. They didn't know how to get a hold of Mando, So they eventually got me to try to get a hold of Mando, and which I did. So I made sure I went with Mando, and I, you know, wanted to get my foot in the door as well. Like, hey, if I'm going to help you get Mando, I got to get something. So they, that's why I was able to referee, wrestle, and do all kinds of stuff in that movie. And I was there for everything.
You might have been the reason Mando then did all of the training videos and stuff with Gene LaBelle, and, you know, and now we see Chavo Jr. Doing that. He's been on set with, like, the Glow Netflix show, Young Rock. He's the choreographer, the wrestling choreographer for a million projects, and it may all come to you getting Mondo in on Grunt to start with.
Never know, but yeah. And Chavo Jr. is doing very well with all the projects that he's involved with. I just had him at one of my shows. You know, he came in and did a sign, you know, signing and stuff. He got him a payday out of it. That was just maybe a month or so ago.
I was asking Chavo Jr. at WrestleCon on April 1st of this year in L.A. About Mondo, and he said Mondo's very difficult to get a hold of now. Are you still in touch with Mondo? Isn't he doing okay, I hope?
I talked to Mondo maybe about a year or so ago, and I owe him a call. I was asking Chavito about him, and he said, no, he's doing okay. He's doing fine.
And I lost touch with Hector, because if you remember the way they were introduced in L.A., it was first Gory brought in Chavo in August of 75, and then they do, like, months of vignettes. Once Chavo got over and Gory left to establish Chavo Sr., then they did all these vignettes for months and months and months, and finally Mondo debuts, and he's working with Tolis and Roddy Piper, and then they do months and months for Hector of these vignettes before he even arrived. They were all shot in El Paso.
Yeah.
And Hector, real good guy, very religious, as was Eddie. I don't know if you keep in touch with Hector, who's been in Florida for decades.
Yeah, no, I have talked to him. I talked to him right after Chavo Sr. passed away, Chavo Guerrero. And he's a great guy. And like you said, very religious.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing. And he, speaking of color commentary, he did that for years and years and years, through TNA's glory years. And, I can't say enough great things about Hector. Mondo, I love, too. Mondo's a wild man. I'll never forget, speaking of Steve Strong, that I think it was 1994, Cauliflower Alley, where Steve Strong, Mondo, Don Morocco are in the back. Fez is in a tux on stage, and they'd had a little too much to drink at the open bar, and Fez was, like, fuming. And then Dr. Jerry Graham is in his wheelchair sitting right in front of Fez, egging him on, because they had heat from the 60s. And Fez was, like, fuming. And, you know, like, Mondo, Victor Rivera, Steve Strong. It was pretty wild scenes. Let me throw back to Russ before we finish up. And we're going to let you plug anything and everything, EWF. And any other projects for yourself. But Russ, let me throw it to you.
Yeah, so what would you consider the main career highlight? If you wanted people to sum up your career and look at one particular thing and say, this was your career highlight, what would you say that was?
It's fair, because Jesse's done so much for the
person. Let him answer. Let him answer.
There's been so much, but like there's a documentary made on School of Hard Knocks, you know, on me. And what happened between me and Bill Anderson, and that was done by Augie Max. He's very busy in Hollywood, but he did this project. He put it all together, the feud that we had and everything that went on at the time. And at the beginning, yeah, there was a lot of hatred between Bill Anderson and myself. And at the beginning, you know. On my part, you know, I didn't start right. I didn't, you know, I was mad. And then as a month later goes by, I said, you know what, let's start all over with this, because I don't think we need to be so negative about it, you know. And we touched it up, and since then, Bill and I are talking to each other. We made up our differences, and to me, It's a beautiful thing that Augie did. It hasn't been out. He's so busy. You know, Augie does the so much in Hollywood, the Grammys, everything. I mean, everything that's big, he's part of it, you know. And he just has not had the time to put it out like he wanted to, you know. And whether it's on Netflix or who knows what, but you know, eventually he says he will. And once that comes out, it says a lot about me. It says a lot about, you know, what I have gone through and about what the Empire Wrestling Federation means to me and my family.
That's good to hear, because Billy has had a lot of health issues, heart issues, a lot of stuff in the last X amount of years. And so that's good for both those of us who know both of you guys. That's great to hear. And again, another guy, I don't know if you broke him in after Les Thatcher did, or you finessed him, was Carl Anderson. He spent a lot of time with EWF, right?
Yeah, he came from back east, and he spent some time with us at the school. He trained at the school with me, and did some great stuff on EWF. Absolutely, Carl Anderson, a great guy.
And of course, I mean, the part of the big faction in New Japan, and one of the greatest tag teams of modern day. They've won titles in WWE and TNA Impact, and obviously New Japan, big deal.
When I got him a tryout with WWF. It was supposed to be in San Diego, and that's the day that he was supposed to fly out to Japan for the very, very first time. And he didn't know what to do. I said, "Carl, you go, bro. Go to Japan, do your thing. When you come back, I'll give you another tryout." You know, and it worked out well because he did good in Japan. And when he got done with all of that, he wound up in WWE, and I'm sure it paid off for him. I mean, if he would have gotten in at the time I was trying to get him in, he wouldn't have made that much money. But by doing what he did in Japan, it made him more valuable.
He was part of the Bullet Club, like right from the get-go, with Prince Devitt, who's now, Russ, what's his name in WWE? I always forget. The Prince, he's part of the group with Rhea Ripley.
Oh, you caught me flat-footed.
Finn Balor is his name in WWE, but most of us know when he started out, obviously with New Japan, with Carl Anderson and that whole, the very first iteration of the Bullet Club is Prince Devitt. Let's see, Jesse, we're winding up. Let me have you plug anything and everything. So that was great to hear that you guys made up. I'm going to have you plug anything and everything, and then give one last memory or thought that you maybe haven't shared or been asked about John Tolis, the Golden Greek.
I can't think of anything about John at the moment, but I got some events coming up. We just got done last night. We did an event over at Glen Helen Amphitheater. They had Post Malone there, thousands of
people. Wow, really?
They hired the EWF to go up there and entertain, do a pre-party deal, with them. And that turned out really, really well. And I don't have all the dates in front of me right now, but we do have some events coming up. If you go to Empire Wrestling Federation or you go into my Facebook, Jesse Hernandez Facebook, and you will see if you click on the top there, I put all the flyers for upcoming events right there on that page there. You can check it out. And we're doing a brewery called Luchador Brewery Company over in Cathedral City. And that's coming up in September 16th, I believe. Yeah, September 16th to celebrate, their Mexican Independence Day or whatever. And it looks like it's going to be a great event there. And of course, we got a place here coming on the 23rd of next month called I Love Chicken and Waffles. It's a restaurant, and we do events right behind them. They got a little lot where we pack them in with people there, man, and we do our EWF events there as well. And then, of course, we got the VFW in San Bernardino. But yeah, check us out, Empire Wrestling Federation.com. Go to my Facebook, Instagram, EWF Jesse. And you'll see some more stuff in there.
I was going to say, when John was a security guard, when his career ended, he was working at Channel 7 locally in Hollywood, like just south of like Echo Park or Los Feliz. And I went with him to Roscoe's House of Chicken and Waffles. Yeah. So Tolis had been there, loved that place, and Bob's Big Boy, you know, away from the crowds, because prior to that, if he'd done that a decade before, he'd been mobbed by people. But just, I really want to thank you. Russ, any other questions or anything before we let Jesse?
I just wanted to thank Jesse for being on the show tonight, and he's welcome to come on the show anytime in the future, especially if he wants to promote anything big that's going on with Empire Wrestling Fed. Or if he wants any of his talent to come from Empire to come on the show, they can contact us. We'd be happy to interview them sometime.
Great. Thank you for the offer.
Jesse, total legend. Are you going to Cauliflower? It's this coming weekend, starting like next Monday, really.
Yeah, I'll be going up there. Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. We'll have you back to give a report, because our top honorees there, CM Punk, Mickey James, Ron Simmons, you know, it's a big, huge cast. Also, who's the Lucha guy? Is it Damian 666? It's going to be up there.
Who I've known for many, many years.
Wonderful guy. He's had different. He's done. Was it Astro Man? What was his other gimmick with the hood?
No, it was. What the heck?
It's a comic book character, though.
Yes,
Ultraman. Yes. Ultraman.
Ultraman. Exactly.
And of course, his son is tag champions for Billy Corgan's NWA too.
Yes.
Bestia 666. Correcto.
Yep.
Bestia. Sorry, Bestia. Say. But Jesse Hernandez, total legend, wrestler, trainer, promoter, everything, and beloved person. Everybody in the wrestling business globally respects and loves Jesse Hernandez. Jesse, grazie, Vigo. Thank you so much for helping us on John Tolis. And I'll have to talk to you about Colorado Alley when you get back from Vegas.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We'll see everyone next week. Good night, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Jesse, I'll send you a link, too, tomorrow when Russ sends it. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Really appreciate it. And I'm glad we got everything done.